Welcome to another episode of Know Your Ombud. This is a series of conversations aimed to help you, as a consumer of financial services, understand your rights and where to go if you are not treated fairly. The Financial Ombud schemes includes the FASE Ombud, the JSC Ombud, and the Pension Funds Adjudicator, as well as the National Financial Ombud, all of which are overseen by the Ombud Council. Lodging a complaint with an ombud is free, and you do not have to appoint a lawyer. Let's be honest, there's not much in life that you get for free. In each episode, we speak to one of the ombuds to understand the cases they deal with and how the ombud adjudicates complaints. We examine cases where the ombud has ruled in favor of the consumer and those that go in favor of the financial institution. This helps to explain our rights and our responsibilities. The National Financial Ombud is responsible for handling complaints from customers of banks, credit providers, short-term and long-term insurance. And today, our focus is on credit providers. And joining me is Howard Gabriels, who is the head ombud for credit. So welcome, Howard. I'm looking really, really forward to picking your brain today.
Thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure to meet with you.
Howard, just for our listeners, it can be very complicated, all these different ombuds, and we have gone through the process. We've explained what the National Financial Ombud is. But within the National Financial Ombud, you have the Credit Ombud and the Banking Ombud. So what complaints do you handle?
So in the credit division of the NFO, we deal with complaints from everything that we call non-bank. So the credit providers, they cover the retailers. So those would be typically your store cards like RCS, TFG,
Edgar's. Everyone has an Edgar's card.
and that kind of card. Then we've got all the non-bank vehicle finance. So BMW Financial Services, okay. Toyota Financial Services. We also have some non-bank housing, like SA Home Loans, for example. And then we have the large body of micro lenders. Okay. So, and I've omitted in this also the furniture retailers. So the Lewis stores and the like, JD Group and so on. So the micro lenders is the biggest number of credit providers. All credit providers must be registered with the NCR or the National Credit Regulator, and typically all of these organizations are registered as credit providers there.
And the minute they're registered as credit providers, the law requires them to be a member or to fall under the NFO.
So yes, in terms of the Financial Sector Regulation Act, which provide for the regulation of the ombud system in what is typically referred to as Chapter 14 of the Act, Section 211 requires any credit provider to belong to an ombud with jurisdiction, if there is such an ombud registered.
And I think what's important just to note for listeners is that you don't oversee unregistered lenders. So if you've gone and borrowed money from a loan shark, unfortunately, Howard is not going to be able to help you.
If you have a problem with an unregistered credit provider, then we would refer you to the NCR because the NCR has powers of enforcement that we don't have. So they would be able to go with the police and shut down such a credit provider or do whatever is required in terms of the law to make them account for the illegal behavior.
And another very important thing that you deal with is reckless lending. And in fact, I must just tell you, Howard, I've just done an article about one of your cases for News 24. And that's very important because I don't think many people are aware that if they believe that they have been lent to recklessly. I'm always a bit like, at what point is it reckless lending? At what point did you lie on your form about your income and expenses? But if there is a genuine case of reckless lending, they can come to you.
Yes, and we find surprisingly still in this time that there are some cases of reckless lending. It's much less than in the past. Credit providers, the micro lenders, really understand the regulation in relation to what they must do in making that affordability assessment. And I also think that many credit providers are really trying. We do find from time to time somebody cutting corners and sometimes we find people making genuine mistakes, which then can be rectified. But on the whole, I'm pretty confident that reckless lending is less of a problem than what it was 10 or 15 years ago.
Well, that's good to know, I must say. But let's go on to a very different topic, because one of the case studies that we're going to discuss is to do with value-added services. And just to explain to listeners, this is these things where you get club cards and you get credit protection, and then you get little these bells and whistles that get added to your, it's very specific, often to store cards. And I wanted to relate a story, Howard. I had somebody working for me, and she wanted to open up, I think in this case it was an Edgar's card. She wanted to buy her son a pair of shoes, and she said to me, well, I'm going to take out an Edgar's card, pay it off over 6 months. You know, it's interest-free, all the rest of it. I said, so when you open it, make sure you do not sign up for any of these value-added services, because they just add to the bill. And she said, absolutely. And she went in and she made sure that she didn't tick any of that. She said no to everything. First month statement comes, they've all been added on there. It has been a big industry problem. And you actually recently had a case, and it was an important case, because it actually changed the way that that the rules apply now.
Well, you're absolutely right. So what the value-added services is you have a store card, and then based on you have that store card, the third parties that are now selling your services. So you could buy data, you could, in this particular case, there was some mobile subscription where you're getting SMSs from some mobile provider. The credit life often would include a funeral policy. In one of the matters that we dealt with, the individual had 13 such items, right, on that account. In the case we're talking about today, there were about four or five of these additional charges on the account. So what the key problem here was, when the consumer came to us, she was complaining that I'm paying my installments religiously every month, but my account is growing, my outstanding balance is increasing. And she could not understand why that is happening. What we then did is we investigated the matter, and we could see that the amount required by the credit provider to be paid every month do not take into account these additional services that must be paid. So it says, what is the outstanding balance on the purchases you made in store for that dress or shoes or whatever, but it does not take into account these value-added services. So typically what happens is your outstanding amount, let's say, is 2,000 rands. You're paying whatever the credit provider says you must pay to pay it off over, say, 6 months. It's probably more like 400, right? And then added onto that, then comes the 19 rand, 99, the 29 rand, and so on. So what typically happens, you only pay the 400 rand, but there's these additional things that then push up. What was concerning to us is that interest is charged on the outstanding balance, which include these amounts, And that then we think is unfair to the consumer, because the credit provider do not require you to pay anything towards that, but they charge you interest on the outstanding amount. So we had quite a serious engagement with this particular credit provider. And in the end, the outcome of the matter was that we absolutely believed that the treatment of the consumer was not fair. And hence, we ended up in an agreement where the credit provider refunded this person for certain of these obligations in the agreement. In fact, the total refund was about 10,000 rands. But more importantly, the credit provider agreed to change their policy and in future would make the consumer pay a bigger installment so that it avoids this problem of the account growing rather than coming down.
And I think how this is such an important point, and I had this discussion with Leanne Jackson, of course, who's the head of the Ombud Council, around the importance of complaining to the Ombud. Because not only was this woman able to get her money back, but she, if you get a few of these cases, you start to see a systemic problem in the industry, and you can actually rectify it and improve it. Because definitely for me, these value-added services have been in the past a real issue. And so I think it's really important that people understand that in complaining, you highlight bad practice.
We've had quite a few of these complaints against different retailers. So it's not only one retailer that we had this problem. And the very encouraging thing is with this one big retailer now agreeing to change their system, I think there's a conversation to be had with the industry that everybody need to change their system. But the real benefit of the Ombud in this instance is that it's solving a problem for thousands of consumers who may not even know that they have the problem, or secondly, do not take the energy and time to complain about it. But this now resolves that issue even for those ones as well. And that's the real benefit of an Ombud system in the economy overall, because strange as this may sound, it benefits the credit provider because it establishes a good practice. It establishes a practice that gives consumers confidence to continue their economic life with the credit provider.
But I would just like to comment that consumers must also check their statements. You know, that's also part of, you know, we're very lazy, let's be honest, Howard. We only discover when the bills are not paid. But I want to get onto the other case that you raised. And this was also very interesting. This was when a credit provider was abusing the fraud provision. So a woman had purchased an appliance,
rental agreement.
You can rent a TV. And she rented it in 2018 and she paid religiously. 2020 comes, COVID, she loses her job, can't continue to pay. And instead of taking, you know, the normal action in terms as a credit provider, this credit provider listed her with the South African Fraud Prevention Services as having committed fraud, which is a very serious allegation.
It is a very serious allegation, and one need to understand the implication of this. If I list you, Maya, for fraud on the South African Fraud Prevention Service, if you walk into a bank for a loan, they will pick up that listing and you will not get a loan as long as that listing is against your name. What's worse is if I apply for a position in government or in local government or anywhere else, they will pick up that listing for fraud against your name. and you would not make it onto the shortlist. So the implication of having a fraud listing against your name is very, very serious, and it limits your opportunities in many, many different ways. So in this instance, the person really got into trouble because she could not honor her monthly payments, and then she was listed. Originally, the credit provider did not agree with us when we said this practice is wrong. We then approached the South African Fraud Prevention Service, and they agreed with us that this is not the intention of the provision of their code. And they, in fact, removed the listing. Subsequent to that, we got two more consumers complaining to us, completely ignorant of what else has happened before. And we went through that same process with the credit provider on those two matters. We had much more in-depth discussion with the South African Fraud Prevention Service, and really want to thank them because they also helped us to understand better how this particular provision worked. And the outcome of that was that the credit provider has now agreed that when a consumer is in default of paying their account, they will no longer list them on the Fraud Prevention Service.
Again, you know, this is going to help many, many, many other consumers because of the investigation of those complaints. Now, Howard, we focused a lot on where you have ruled in favor of the consumer. But when I look at your statistics, it's about a 50-50. So about 50% of your cases are in favor of the consumer and about 50% go in favor of the financial institutions. And I do think we need to pause for a moment and talk about responsibilities. We've spoken about consumer rights, and let me tell you, we all want to know our rights. But when you borrow money, there is a responsibility to repay it.
Absolutely. You know, 1994 was a very big year in our country. People like myself gained the right to vote for the first time. 1996, we adopted the constitution that gave us many rights we did not have before then. Things like the right to vote, the right to be not discriminated against. And these rights, in the credit sense, was written into the National Credit Act. So consumers have important rights. You have the right to apply for credit. You have the right to ask for reasons why you have been denied credit. You have the right to be addressed in your own language. You have the right to have understandable language presented to you. And all of these rights are really important rights to protect consumers. But with rights come responsibilities. So, for example, when you sign the contract for the loan, that contract says, I understand and have read the agreement, and I agree with the terms of that agreement. So that agreement would, amongst others, also say that on the first of every month, you will pay X amount against the loan you have taken. And your responsibility is to make sure that you pay in accordance with the agreement. So it's really important to understand that you enter into that agreement having exercised your rights, but with that comes the responsibility. So in the event that the consumer gets into trouble, it's important to understand that the consumer must approach the credit provider and explain what the problem is, and then make an arrangement that can work for the consumer and that would be acceptable to the credit provider. That is the responsible thing to do if you get into trouble. The notion that you avoid the credit provider, that you run away, that you hide, you don't answer your phone anymore, is really the worst advice you can give yourself. So really important to understand what those obligations are. Important to understand that credit providers are also people. Yes, they want to get repaid for the loan they granted you, but you can reason with them and you can explain to them and you can make arrangements, because what they ideally want is to give you another loan in the future, and they don't want to lose you as a customer. So that's really important for consumers to understand.
Well, thank you, Howard, because I actually wanted to end on that note. I think it's very important as a consumer to act responsibly and engage with your credit providers. You can't go and take a complaint to the credit ombud because you have avoided your responsibilities and obligations. Then it's not going to go in your favor. The ombud is there to uphold your rights if you feel that you have not been treated fairly. So thank you very much, Howard. And to our listeners, please catch up with all our other discussions with the other Leeds ombuds so that you can understand your rights and where to go if you are having a problem with your service provider. And please remember that the National Financial Ombud, in fact, all our ombud schemes in South Africa, are a free service. You do not need a lawyer. You don't even have to go onto social media. You can go to an ombud and get your case resolved. So please do so, and look forward to more conversations.